We're going to be talking shortly with Gloria Rolando, who made this great film, 1912, Breaking the Silence, which is a story of an uprising took place in eastern Cuba in 1912. And it's in the history books, but what exactly happened and what it was all about was lost. And we'll take a break, I think, here. We'll take a little break and come back, and we will talk with Gloria Rolando. And we are back. It's Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. Check us out. We're also on Facebook, The Taylor Report, right? Facebook/The Taylor Report, as opposed to A Taylor Report. And we're very glad. We have a very interesting guest. There was a film shown, and Phil and I attended yesterday at 2 o'clock at Beth Satoon. It was titled, the film is 1912, Breaking the Silence, and chronicles for the first time the 1912 massacre of thousands of members of the Independents of Color, the hemisphere's first black political party outside Haiti. Well, of course, Haiti does echo the first revolutionary republic founded by slaves, former slaves. Gloria Rolando, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It was a very touching film, and it is your product. I noticed you called the filmmaker, not the director, producer, whatever, but it was...
I had to do everything.
Yeah, you had to do it from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Well, how about inspiration? What started you off to do this film? Why did you say, well, we got to do it? We had a story called 1912, Breaking the Silence.
Bueno,
what started that?
I need to tell that in 1999, I made a short history that the name is The Roots of My Heart, Las Raíces de Mi Corazón, where it was the first time that I talk about the Independent Party of Color through a family history, through the history of Mercedes, a black woman in the present. She's like a journalist, and in her family there is a silence around the grandfathers. And between the reality of the history and a dream that Mercedes had in the film, she discovered the connection that her grandfathers had with the Independent Party of Color. Mm-hmm. Their grandfather disappeared, he disappeared in that moment. But it's true that through the roots of my heart, the people could not get a lot of information about what happened in 1912. So little by little, with the help of different historians, few resources that I get, I was able to start in 2003 recording, doing research for a documentary that can help to show what happened, how it was reflected in the headlines, in the press, and memories. And also, the most important for me was the historical evaluation that the different historians in Cuba, they could offer to the people.
Yes.
In this way, we can talk about the 1912, but also in a very didactic and academic way.
Yeah. Well, it was very telling. And by the way, it's good that you were working at this, because many of these were elderly people. It was clear from looking at, they had not talked a lot about this.
It was like sitting
at a family table. Mm-hmm. They would say, my grandfather was so-and-so.
Yes.
And the way they were connecting was basically their mother told them, their father told them, or an old uncle
told
them.
But on the ground, in silence, not to talk very much about this. And this kind of silence, it was important to mention in the title, Breaking the Silence, because the official history, keeping silent, since these issues happened, the black people keeping silent, the historian keeping silent, because it was something terrible that happened in Cuba in 1912.
Yes.
And between the black people, it was too much shame, it was too much fear also to talk about this.
Yes.
And in the way that the newspaper presented the people who were in jail, you know, yes, as a consequence of the uprising.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment was terrible. They were accused as a racist people, people who wants to destroy the nation. They were struggling against the racism, and they were accused as a racist. So for that reason, they tried to create a lot of confusion around them, that they want to destroy.
And with some success, right, in terms of the main media.
Exactly.
It was a
tremendous success that exists even until the present.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, again, I applaud that, because now you've put this on the record. People who are, in a way, they're bearing witness. This is what I understood. By the way, you identified a paper which was quite fascinating. And again, this is one of the things I really appreciated watching. Is that instead of having someone tell me that people were saying this, people were saying that, you actually showed us the page of the paper.
Yes.
You marked the passage, and then it was made available, and of course in Spanish and English. But if we could see exactly what was being said, as well as terrible caricatures, many, many cartoons.
Cartoons, yes.
Powerful.
Exactly. So,
when did you see those for the first time?
Through some of the historians that they made research before me. I didn't discover this topic of the Cuban history. There were many people that they
other
were
people
working.
Found Cuban history.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So something that is, you know, that in Cuba, because of we don't have many resources, you have to work with the original newspaper.
Yes.
Sometimes we have to stop because of the dust.
It'll fall apart, right?
And I get a lot of allergy to all these old
papers. To the dusty papers.
Yes.
So.
But at the same time, you were touching a piece of history of Cuba.
Well, that paper, the what is it called? The pre
the
I
the headlines, the headlines of the
paper of the Party of Color. Mm-hmm. What was the name of that paper?
Previsión.
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 Yeah. Now that struck me as a very well written paper.
Yes.
Excellent paper.
Excellent newspaper. Yes. Yeah.
I wonder what sort of circulation. Where was it? One part of Cuba. Where would you find copies of that?
Previsión was the official newspaper of the Independent Party of Color. It had a limited circulation in Havana,
mm-hmm,
because
it didn't circulate in Santiago.
It circulated maybe, but they didn't have too many resources. They were poor people, no. So they in the other areas of the country they have another that is called Reivindicación.
Yeah.
In Santiago, they have Libertad. So they have different newspapers. The problem is that you miss part of the second chapter where they talk a little bit.
There was a technical difficulty.
And also in the third chapter, they talk a little bit about another newspaper that they used to have. But all of them, they have a limited circulation, you know.
Yes.
But when you get some readings of the newspaper, you see how they feel Cuba, how they want to defend Cuba. How in Previsión, in the newspaper, they presented their program, the program of the members of the Independent Party of Color that was very progressive.
And
can you imagine in 1908 talking in Cuba with the new Republic of Cuba, talking about 8 hours of work, the land for everybody, free education?
Yes.
You know, so that the participation of the people with different opportunities, universities and everything. So they have a lot of advance in relation with the time.
Yes. Now, one of the people, and we're speaking to Gloria Rolando, and she is the producer, I'm going to call you producer, director, 1912, Breaking the Silence. One of the individuals, and they were all really quite attractive people and eloquent. One of them, I think he was a historian, said, you know, some people think of this as this incident as a result of the Platt Agreement, or the American, because America was a At that moment, two things had terrible had happened. They had crushed Reconstruction in the United States. They had set out on a program of repression of black Americans and raw, ugly segregation. And in an imperial quest at the turn of the century, they captured the Philippines and Cuba and Puerto Rico. They took these over. And so the idea was, well, that this attitude towards black Cubans was emanating because of the Platt Amendment, which, as my understanding is, it says that America will secure what it wishes.
And also, you know, that Americans, they have a lot of control in the Cuban economy. Mm-hmm. So anything that can create any kind of, you know, problems, they will eliminate drastically.
But that American outlook was being accommodated by a terrible group who had taken power in within Cuba, right? Those who, in other words, they felt a brotherly whiteness or something.
Exactly.
With Washington.
A lot of races, because we have the races as part of the heritage of the slavery system. Mm-hmm. Remember that in Cuba we finished the abolition of the slavery in 1886. Very close to the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And also the presence of the Americans in Cuba since the end of our War of Independence in 19th century. The presence of the Americans also was determined, you know, another more racist in the island.
Mm-hmm.
So the prejudice, the racism that exists inside Cuba, plus the racism and all the problems that they brought to Cuba with the discrimination of the blacks and the discrimination of all Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember that they owned Cuba through the economy, through the sugar industry, through the mines industry. So for that reason, they were watching. I use an images in the third chapter that they are watching what is happening, little by little. I repeat the same images because it was in the newspaper.
I'm sorry, I would say we repeat that.
The images of the American Uncle Sam watching.
Yes.
You know what happened in Cuba. Yeah. They were watching, you know, and I use it in different moments, especially in the third chapter.
Yeah, there's a couple of them so striking of U.S. warships with Uncle Sam with his binoculars. Now, where was that taken from? Do you know what paper that was that produced that cartoon?
Oh, I work with different newspapers, especially in Havana. I think that it was taken from one of the newspapers in Havana.
You know, by the way, Americans were arguing at that time. There was a healthy movement in the U.S. opposing empire and opposing occupation of countries. Mark Twain, the great American humorist and writer, and I think William James, the philosopher, they even formed a league called the Anti-Imperialist League, saying it's poison to be trying to take over countries and to make them look like us.
But remember that our republic was born in the combination with people from Cuba that have interest in United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a combination, you know.
By the way,
our presidents, they play with the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, when the uprising of the Independent Party of Color, who sold the weapons to the government?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this sequence in the film of that they mentioned how they get new weapons, and all of them came from United States.
Yes.
And I have a photo in the film of the Marines landing in Cuba.
Yes, 7,000.
Landing in Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
Because some people think that the history of the Guantanamo Bay
is to this day.
No. It's something that started a long time ago.
And they rationalized their being there with this terrible doctrine that they were fighting racism, when actually they're fighting people who were resisting racism.
Exactly.
And so they put it upon the people who resisted. But I'm wondering about the sequence of it. And we want to remember this had a very ugly, terrible ending with several thousand people killed.
Mm-hmm. In a short period of time.
Am I right in that I think one of the historians there mentioned it. There was an election coming, and the Party of Color wanted to participate.
Be part of the election.
And they said, no, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And so their initiative in that, I guess it was June 1912,
mm-hmm.
was, or whatever the date, they were insisting that this election couldn't go forward without respecting them.
Exacto.
And this led to the moment, I guess.
Yes, and they want that the party will be part of the process of the election, and they want the recognition, and they want to be legal, because you missed the second chapter, but in the second chapter, what happened is that in 19, the party was founded in 1908, but it was declared illegal in 1910.
Yes. Yes.
So all the struggle was around between 1910 until 1912, that they get tired, no more political speech or you know, and decided to go to the uprising.
Yes.
I remember that those people, those men, were people that they grew up inside the war of the independence. So for them, to organize an uprising, it was also a way to protest, but also for them, it was part of their life, because have a process of 30 years to get the independence of Cuba. So some of them, they were a teenager, they were a child, they were a teenager inside the process of the independence.
Yes. No, these were leading figures in the struggle, and who had then found themselves marginalized, right?
Yes.
And what a terrible... could you talk about the fact that in the armed struggle itself for the independence of Cuba in 1895, I guess is roughly the date, the percentage of black Cubans was very high. I mean,
very high. Since 1868 that they started the first process of the independence. Mm-hmm. And after they stopped, they start again. And the last process started in 1895.
And their participation was quite welcome.
Exacto, exacto. And in this process, we have a slave, ex-slave, maroon, free people, free blacks. So all kind of black people, all of them, that they were fighting together with the whites.
Yeah.
And especially... in the case of the Liberation Army, we have important leaders like Antonio Maceo, Quintín Bandera, Guillermo Moncada, many others, many other black leaders.
Yes.
You know? So they have a lot of expectation. And also the plan, the idea of José Martí of equality for everybody. But remember that during the process of the independence, especially in the second part, in 1895, José Martí died. In 1896, Antonio Maceo died. Many things changed.
Yes.
It was not the same. And also the intervention in 1898 of the Americans. So everything changed. So
you know, it's a grim thing to note, but the centers of empire have been known to assassinate people. I'm not suggesting it in this case, but they understand the elimination of significant individuals and the opportunity it provides, whether the person has an accident, dies in a war, but to give them a chance to change situations, as we know, of course, the most famous, or one of the most, is Patrice Lumumba, his murder. Congo has suffered ever since. It has not been able to rally and find itself a voice. And Maceo my impression from your film, was that kind of authoritative voice. People would turn to him, know they could trust him. He had earned his status as a leader. Someone in the film quoted, said that the slogan was at one point, liberty, fraternity, equality, but especially equality.
Especially equality.
Was that?
Exactly.
There was a second leader. I don't know whether that was Maceo or the...
Sí, it was Maceo. Sí.
Yeah.
Especially equality.
Yeah. Now, the leaders that came to the fore and who were killed there, Could you talk about the one of them has a I'm sorry to not know these names. Your film is my introduction to them, but is a French name, and there's some question about whether, you know, what his roots would be.
See, the two main leaders of the Independent Party of Color were Evaristo Estenoz in Havana and Pedro Ibonet in Santiago de Cuba. Of course, there were many others, but the two main leaders were Evaristo and Pedro Ibonet. And in the case of Pedro Ibonet, he was born in Santiago de Cuba. Mm-hmm. And he was also a member of the Liberation Army. Mm-hmm. And it's true that he has a French name, mm-hmm. a French surname. Mm-hmm. And remember that in Cuba we have an immigration that was very big. After the Haitian Revolution, we have many French that arrived to Cuba, and they developed the coffee plantation mm-hmm. when the Haiti, Saint-Domingue, yeah. was devastated by the revolution. Yes. They came to Cuba. Mm-hmm. Some of them, they arrived to Cuba with their slave or ex-slave. Mm-hmm. And that's how the French names arrived to Cuba.
Uh-huh. Actually, yes, some of the Americans, in talking this up about intervening, were talking about the French maybe playing a...
one of the problems that have the independence, as I said yesterday, is that being one of the leaders with this kind of French name, mm-hmm. they said, oh, they have the influence or the support of the Black Republic of Haiti. And remember that the since that time, they tried to create, you know, terrible images about Haiti
yes.
because of the revolution that they made.
Yes.
So during the whole 19th century in Cuba, it was something that we call the Fair of the Black because they were the owners of the slave, the owner of the plantation system. They were so scared that the same happened in Cuba.
Yes, and by the way, I understand Thomas Jefferson had similar problems.
Yes, and it's something that happened because the level of exploitation of the slave in Cuba increased during the 19th century mm-hmm. because the kind of production flourished a lot.
Yes.
Coffee plantation and also the sugar plantation.
Yes.
We have more slave system, more richness because we get in Cuba the production of coffee and cane and sugar that used to have Saint-Domingue.
Mm-hmm.
It was adopted by Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So our market and the money and the richness of all these planters grow a lot.
Yes.
So more suffering for the Black people.
More human beings called slaves.
Exactly.
Real thinking, intelligent, capable human beings.
Sí.
Which, as you say, created a great fear, and fear leads to irrational violence.
Exactly.
The story is so well told. Now, is there a... The silence is broken with...
Little by little.
Little by little.
We cannot say that it's totally broke. It takes time.
Yeah.
It will take time. For Cuban, because it's still...
Well, there have been novels, right? Some poems. And
it's still painful. It's still painful, you know. It's still painful to know that José Martí's son participated in the fight against the Independent Party of Color, because José Martí is our national leader.
Yes.
And we respect José Martí very much. We love José Martí. He's poet. The way that he made introduction of Cuban history.
Isn't it interesting how countries produce these paradoxes? Three or four of the major leaders of the slaveocracy in the United States had the name Jefferson. The leader of it was Jefferson Davis, and descendants of George Washington were fighting on the side of the slave owners against Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. But José Martí's son was José Martí's son, no José Martí. José Martí is still our leader, and we have all respect, being black person all of us, we have a major admiration and respect for José Martí.
Yes.
But José Martí Isaias Bazán was his son, and he was a citizen of that republic.
Yes.
And trying to understand that republic that was born mm-hmm. in 1902
mm-hmm.
is totally different. It's another history.
Yes. I wonder about the how is you've interviewed so many historians. Is there a common vocabulary when they describe the events? Do they always say massacre of 1912, or do they say rebellion? What's the nomenclature around this event?
Something that it was a big challenge is what kind of interview I need to do in order that it could be a conversation.
I mean, a silence will cause this, right? In other words, we should chew on the words and find new language. Should we not?
Because it's not, I don't want an interview like a class mm-hmm. in front of the students.
Yeah.
It was like an anecdote. Because I have few elements to create an audiovisual language. I mm-hmm. only have their voices, their images of the historian, some photos, some clips of the newspaper, the music. So as an artist, it's very difficult to create the articulation of and the selection of everything, because all of them, they made long, long interviews. Mm-hmm. And I had to create the language, a speech between each one, you know, and cut, and this one supposed to say this and continue with the next one. And I have to show. So this is a big word in the script and mm-hmm. with the editor and mm-hmm. the musician.
Mm-hmm.
This is the big challenge
because
I didn't have fiction images in the film, but at the same time, I need to introduce the people in the atmosphere with some images that mm-hmm. recreate that period.
But by the way, you really do get the period. I must say that again, the putting the newspaper right in front of us and giving us the exact words, undoctored and not generalized, but the actual came out of people's mouths or pens as they were saying it. Because as you know, many of us object. Historians put together a summary of events, and it's their language and not the people who they're talking about. Those people mm-hmm. didn't use the words.
I know this kind of documentary. I know this kind of documentary that gives you a narration. You follow the narration. You are obliged to believe in the kind of information that they are going to give you.
Yeah, you're trapped.
Yes, so you cannot escape. You cannot think, because it's just what are they talking to you to follow. In this case, I show you, try to understand the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't impose you, that this is the truth.
Yes.
But also I use, for example, telegrams, text of the newspaper.
Exactly. Their own words.
Their own words.
And then make people address that and walk back from that. But mm-hmm. you don't alter the personality or the mm-hmm. character or the person. A couple of things I want to make sure I ask you about. And by the way, we're speaking to Gloria Rolando, who is the filmmaker of 1912, Breaking the Silence, and the story of the 1912 massacre of thousands of members of the Independents of Color, the hemisphere's first black political party outside Haiti.
And the only one in Cuba. We didn't have any more.
Yeah,
we didn't have any
first
more.
And last.
Well,
the only.
I don't know in the future something
I shouldn't
happened.
Say. Yeah, who knows? The future belongs to whoever belongs to.
Exactly.
Now, I want to make sure I ask. You have seen people in Santiago in a church, and I was just wondering, what was the church saying at that time? Did the church take? We often wonder today. Everybody, the Vatican makes statements just like it's a government.
No, I don't.
Did the church have a role at in 1912?
I don't think so. No. I introduced elements of the church, but it was related with the history of Evaristo Estenoz, because I found
some of these people were quite devout.
But I found evidence that, for example, in 1910, they went to visit the lady of the the charity that is our patron in Cuba, and they went to ask for the unity of all the Cubans. And I found through the pastor of the church how they signed, and they wrote in the
yes,
in the
some
book.
Of the documents you had were
yes.
found with the church.
It's in the second chapter.
Yeah, si. Because a couple of the leaders were visiting the church, and we know that they wrote their prayers there.
Si. And, they wrote.
That was very helpful.
Yes, because I have this information in one interview, but when I found through the pastor of the church. The verification and the pages where they sign that we are praying Our Lady of the Charity for the unity of all the Cubans in 1910. That kind of things can give you an idea of the ideas of the members of the Independent Party of Color. They talk about all the Cubans, not only about the black.
Yes.
The idea was a nation where everybody, black and white,
especially equality.
Is especially equality, yes.
We're speaking to Gloria Rolando, and the film is 1912, Breaking the Silence. And I just wonder, lastly, shouldn't we all be doing more of what you're doing? That is, revisiting. There are a lot of ugly events which were racial in character across this continent, and certainly in the hemisphere. I think of Brazil, for example. Recently, people were saying, well, you know, Brazil is a study in integration and equality. And then I learned, no, there's terrible problems. And I once saw a documentary about the life of Pelé, the soccer player. And he was kept off teams as a boy. He wasn't allowed on those teams because he was African. We need to revisit that.
Yes.
I mean, your film will inspire others.
There are many, many histories around this. And, for example, the most important for us is the voices of the people. For example, in this...
the voices of people themselves.
Yes. For example, Daisy Rubiera, that is here, also visiting Toronto. She is an important writer. And she wrote a book about her mother, Regita. Regita passed away when she was 96 years old. And Regita, in her book, her mother talked about the memories that she has about 1912, how she was able to escape for the murder in those days. So it's something that through the memory, collective memory, we can make reconstruction of our life.
Well, we're going to make sure we have a copy of the book or a
Regita,
record.
Regita.
Phil wants to announce it.
Yeah, of course, the film is available at a different book list for $25.
Different book list.
Different book list. You can buy the whole film, all three parts of it.
Bathurst Street.
And 946 Bathurst Street.
946 Bathurst Street. It is available.
746 Bathurst Street.
746
Bathurst Street.
We've had
different
several
book list.
I've had several calls today, by the way, asking about it. So the film is available at a different book list.
That's right.
And Gloria Rolando, thank you very much for being our guest. It's an inspiring film. I hope there'll be more. They're listening
bueno,
to the
I am in the process to make the premiere of the next one, because after they killed so many people in the eastern part of the island, they need cheap labor force. And they brought a lot of people from and Haiti. And my last film, Reshipment, Reembarque, is dedicated to the presence of the Haitians in Cuba.
Great. A wonderful story. Gloria, thank you very much. This is the Taylor Report. We'll see you next week.